So you just finished the Star Wars video game that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Oh, Super Star Wars.
I don't know what it's called.
On the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah, going way, way back.
No, Fallen Order. Mm-hmm. It's probably 2 or 3 years old now. It's
at
not
least.
Exactly new, but right. I was thinking about the fact that I've been playing, you know, I was joking about Super Star Wars, but played that. I think I played Star Wars on the NES,
mm-hmm.
which is a terrible, if E.T. is the Nadir.
Sure.
Nadir's,
of bad games.
Nadir's neighbor.
Yeah.
That would be Star Wars on the NES.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I've been literally playing, you know, everybody's been playing Star Wars games. The original arcade Star Wars game, the Vector Graphics one.
Sure.
The cabinet.
As Where long it's like as there the, have the been planes shooting and stuff like that, right? More or less.
No.
Okay. Never mind.
No, it's an early flight sim, kind of.
Okay.
Where there's a yoke.
Okay.
And your flight, you do the trench run.
Okay.
And there's like a chip tune.
Well, that's pretty great.
And there's voice samples from the film that sound like.
Oh, so it's like bad quality recording.
It's not a recording.
Oh.
There is no recording. There is no, I mean, clearly there's no like tape. This isn't like a Mellotron or something like that.
Right.
But it's all chip. That's what chip tune means. It's, you know, nowadays you can, you know, make something sound like it's on a chip, but it's just, it's literally hardwired into a chip.
There is no codec. Right.
There is no like wave or MP3
right.
thing
okay.
that takes this data, interprets it into, you know, into what the computer then produces as music. It's literally just, you know, silicon.
Sure.
On a board.
So, okay, I guess I have a follow-up question for that. Like, was it unintelligible or was it you could understand what they were saying, but it just didn't sound like the actors?
This is, here's a great spot where I'll just drop it in.
Okay.
And it's not going to help you.
Right.
It's only going to make the audience feel nostalgic if they played that game.
Goodbye, Danny, bye. Of that thing.
Wow, that was great.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
And it's enough. You get it.
Okay.
You get the idea.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess that's what you need, right? I mean, it would have been great if it...
The two great tastes that taste fine together.
Wow.
Star Wars and video games.
Uh-huh.
There have been some amazing Star Wars video games. There have been some terrible games that have no right to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's solely because they only exist because they're Star Wars.
Sure.
And I would put this one in the former category. It's a good game.
Yeah.
But notice I said good, not great.
Tell us about that. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's by Respawn Entertainment.
Okay.
Who's done a lot of things recently. Didn't they do Titanfall? I think they did Titanfall.
Like I know. Yes, let's say yes.
And so, you know, LucasArts... When I'm talking about good Star Wars video games, I'm talking about LucasArts games.
Sure.
Of course, LucasArts hasn't existed for a while. I think it actually technically does exist now, but it isn't what it was.
Right.
And those are good games. This is fine. It's very detailed in some places. The art direction is incredible, and you really do feel like you are, you know, in the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
It tells an interesting story that isn't really particularly original when you think about it. It's about Padawans and Masters and betrayals and
sure.
things like that.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's a new story, and it isn't just, well, it looks like I'll be drinking this blue milk here, or just trying to cram Obi-Wan into something else, you know.
Right. New characters, for the most part.
Yeah, new characters, compelling, some great vocal performances, great physical performances, because clearly everybody is...
Mo-capped,
yeah. And I can't remember the main kid, but he was a child actor, a teen actor.
Oh, gosh, I don't know who it is.
Yeah, the redheaded kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
He plays Cal.
Yeah, well, yeah. And Cal Kestis or something like that. It's such a Star Wars name. And they did a good job of also taking some elements of the canon that aren't normally explored and putting in there. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you go to Ilum, the planet where the Jedi crystals are.
Right.
We've seen that before, but maybe not in a video game. having the Night Sisters, mm-hmm. and Dathomir is something that has been in like comics and I think in the Clone Wars series, but it has not been exploited that much yet. And yeah, it's just like neat, you know. It's kind of a they sold it as kind of a Dark Souls type thing, but that falls apart pretty fast.
Yeah, you think so?
I absolutely think so.
Okay.
Yes.
And is that a good thing? Because I know how you feel about Dark Souls. Not necessarily a huge fan.
I don't think they have any... Respawn didn't have any, like, real burning desire to make a Dark Souls game. I think they need to make this fast.
Okay, sure.
That
kind of comes through.
The art direction, the elements are all on point Star Wars in the same way that, like, you watch The Mandalorian and you go, this feels like Star Wars.
Right.
But you're not just showing me an X-Wing. You're not just showing me a Stormtrooper. Those things are there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like their world. It feels like unseen chapters of a Star Wars film or something like that. And this is like that. That's good. But it feels very rushed in a lot of places.
Okay.
There's only like four major places you can go, four planets. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bugs in the game. Nothing that really broke it for me, but there's a little... some of the mechanics feel kind of floaty and weird.
Sure, right.
And I think that making it... nobody wants to play a linear game, but we don't have time for an open world game. So what if we made a game where you kill guys, but then you save it and it resets and all those guys are there again? Mm-hmm. So how do you explain that the guys that you killed on the way to this place... from
back.
A to B, and then you're going B to A, and they're all there again.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's a Souls game. That's what happens.
Right.
And it doesn't, I mean, that's fun to sort of play around and just kill guys for fun and do a little bit of grinding, but yeah, ultimately it just doesn't, it kind of, there are many levels where, like especially special levels where they go, just go off and find this thing, and you go through it and you're like, I'm not backtracking at all. Like this is just a linear game. This is just a Star Wars game. This is just The Force Unleashed or whatever.
Right. Like it feels like...
Although not The Force Unleashed, though.
It feels like you supposedly you have the access to the open world, but it feels like they're forcing you to go a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah.
I finished it. I thought it was pretty good and felt good.
Good.
And... this is a great conversation.
It was
I said off air that I didn't want to be the person who was the only person talking.
Sorry,
the show.
I thought it was entertaining to watch as like a backseat gamer, because there's quite a bit of story to go with it too. And even though you're like going back and redoing some of the same things because you're learning how to defeat these bad guys and everything, I still thought that it was entertaining. You know,
yeah, you think that they could have found a way to merge it into the aesthetic of being a Jedi.
You're getting skills and you're becoming a better Jedi? Like you're becoming a better game player?
Maybe. So, just the reason that Star Wars has lasted this long is because it's compelling drama that is easy to interpret, you know? It's you want to be good. It's good to be good.
Right.
It's bad to give in to rage and anger. And it might feel satisfying, but ultimately it's destructive.
Right.
With lightsabers.
With lightsabers and eyeliner.
And then if you want to go a little deeper, you go, okay, but like what if somebody is being good too passive? You know, do you need to be passionate? Do you need to feel anger about wrongs that are done on you? This game doesn't really necessarily cross over into that, but that all that's there, and I think all that's great. But the ludonarrative dissonance that applies to many aspects of the game is a problem.
Okay.
A ludonarrative is the narrative of a game, but specifically a game that a narrative that you are involved in, and you. Are pushing the character through it.
Uh-huh.
Roger Ebert said that games can never be art because you're not experiencing something. You're part of the story. You affect what happens.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, you mean cinema. That's cinema. You watch cinema.
Right.
I don't get to tell Bogey whether or not he wants him to play it again.
Right.
So I agree that he's right that they can't be cinema, but they can also be art. There's interactive art. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yoko Ono made a lot of interactive art.
She did.
She would scream in her bag and then people would leave. And that was part of the aesthetic.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, if you're going to have a thing where this guy just does this thing over and over and over again, and yeah, you get out there and you suck and those stormtroopers kill you immediately, but right. you fight them and you learn how to beat them. Instead of it just being a Groundhog Day scenario, why can't you make that part of the lunar narrative? Why can't you find some way to, I don't know what it would be, but yeah. they do it. They use that in the game where you, your character has like cut himself off from the Force. He's in hiding because the Empire is hunting Jedi down.
Sure.
And so he has sort of lost his skills and he's lost
so
his edge. And so as you go through, these skills are represented as Force powers, right? The ability mm-hmm. to pull things, push things, shoot lightning, not that one, unfortunately, jump high. And you don't have access to these. But at certain points in the narrative, when it becomes really important for you to have that, then you flash back to training with your master and him training you in these skills.
Sure.
And then you sort of, I don't know, recover that memory or just reach right. that point of connection again in your Force spirit and you get it back. Oh, that's fine. That's all well and good.
Mm-hmm.
But why does every time I kneel down to have a little meditation, do mm-hmm. all those stormtroopers come back to life? You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, what's happening there? Are they fresh stormtroopers from the base?
Who yeah. are, I'm not what, really
what's,
sure.
What's
how
the
you
narrative?
Could,
what is it? Well, could, I kill all these frogs and then I go take a nap and all the frogs are back.
Mm-hmm. Like, you could say this whole thing is like a training simulation, but I don't think that would be very satisfying to play.
So Star Wars doesn't really do time travel and they don't really do simulations either,
right,
do they?
Right, no.
And I'm not sure why that is. At this point in
real.
The world of, I guess, it's literally fantasy. I know. It's space fantasy. Like, in this point in Star Trek, they've done literally everything. Even the things yeah. that they never did because Gene Roddenberry thought they were gross. Like, there's no cyborgs in Star Trek. I know, the Borg, I know. But, like, mm-hmm. why doesn't, you know, it took them 30 years to give Nog a prosthetic leg
sure.
that we never see. And I'm like, I want to see what your cyber legs look like mm-hmm. in your Star Trek future, right?
Right, right.
But they're just not, there's something about being human, or being an alien, but being, you know, a person that's
yes.
important to Star Trek, and they don't care about laser eyes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Star Wars, ironically, is all about the connection between the spirit and the body, you know?
Yeah.
Life creates the Force, makes mm-hmm. it grow. But then you've got all these characters who keep getting their hands and feet chopped off.
Right, so, right, right.
And that's never really explored. Like, nobody ever really says, like, well, what if you were just a brain in a jar? Could you still be
no.
a Jedi or have the Force?
That doesn't come up at all.
Well, not at all. It does.
Oh, okay.
The Bomar monks of Jabba's palace are brains in a jar that live in spider robots. That
great.
Used to study the Force and magic of their world. And then Jabba moved into their palace and kicked him out. I think they're still there.
Are they around?
And every once in a while, somebody says that, like, Darth Vader's like, oh, he's pretty good. He's pretty tough. But he'd be a lot stronger in the Force if he had half his body still. Because he's missing
yeah,
half of his body.
Yeah, he is missing half of his body.
But nobody ever really does anything with that. And they shouldn't. Because that way, midichlorians lie. It's best not to dig into it too
yeah,
much.
Yeah, it's best not to think about it too much.
It's a magical energy field that subs in for human morality
right.
in this universe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I get mad and I kill somebody bad. I forgive somebody and try to redeem them good.
Right. Right.
And then the characters who don't care about the Force tend to be anti-heroes and tend to be kind of devil-may-care type characters.
Right.
Like your Han Solos, your, I don't know if Boba Fett believes in the Force, but he certainly
yeah, I don't know
does
either.
What he wants.
He definitely does what he wants.
This is not a Star Trek show or a Star Wars show.
No, it's not any
There's
of the
Star
There's
no stars shows. In any of this.
No. There's zero stars in the show.
But here we are. So yeah, check it out, Fallen Order, if you haven't played it. It's probably pretty cheap to get somewhere.
Yeah.
I would definitely recommend it. Be patient with it. And then
yes.
Hope for a good sequel. Or hope for a movie. The story is so good, I think it could be a movie.
I think it could too.
You know, they talk about trying to not do Skywalker stuff anymore and get out of that. This would be maybe a good way to go. Similar characters, similar situations, but new goofy names.
Yeah, new goofy names, and I would say a lot of the supporting characters are female too, which I think is really great.
Well, let me just blow it out now. 15 years ago, before this game was a gleam in anybody's eye,
yeah,
I was working on a Star Wars short story.
Sure.
Before I stopped it because I felt like that was pathetic. Sorry to all the fic writers out there, and it featured a Jedi who was a middle-aged black woman.
Okay.
With dreadlocks.
Uh-huh.
And she had a young male apprentice.
Okay.
And they found themselves caught in a situation where, you know, he was captured and she had to either save him or sort of give up on him.
So they found your notes and
I'm just saying it's very similar.
They changed it. I mean, there's
only
a little bit.
It's a long time ago. It's a galaxy far, far away. There's only so many stories in the naked galaxy.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's great. And even like the main kid, you know,
you get to see him as a little kid.
You do get to see him as a little kid quite a bit. I mean, he's a white guy, white cis male, but
he's not a brunette.
He's got red hair, everybody. And I think maybe some freckles.
I love to tease him about his red hair when he's being bad on the screen. And he's got a goofy name, Cal Kestis, but this podcast has a goofy name,
he's
in good company. It's the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, joined as always by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Mikan Hanna.
What's some great Star Wars names right there.
Yeah.
I think we'd be ready to jump into that galaxy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no time travel in Star Wars. But we're time traveling today back to the year 1975 for a classic film starring Sean Connery and Michael Caine. Two of the best actors to come out of the British Isles, and two people who are probably complete opposites in terms of their off-screen lives. What do you think?
Oh, you think so?
Yes.
Okay, I gotta be honest, I don't know a whole lot about Michael Caine's off-screen life, but he seems like a nice guy.
Well, he will definitely talk to you on and on forever patronizingly about how to act on camera. He will do that.
Okay, sure.
You see this? You look, camera's over there. You look over there. See, you do this? Peter Serafinovich is a thing that he does is really great when he does that. Nice guy, as far as anybody knows.
Yeah.
Married to the lady that played Roxanne in the movie that we watched.
Really?
Yes, still married today. And
really?
Family man.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Puts up with Steve Coogan's endless thing about portraying him and whether it's good or bad. And then Sean Connery, we'll just play the Barbara Walters interview right here. Yeah, just give a woman a nice little slap and then we're all done. Wow, that was perfect audio. It's so clear. Got that off of YouTube. Right?
Yeah. May he rest in peace, but yes.
A guy rich enough and fed up enough with it that he just basically he died in the Bahamas because that's where he went to just like hide from everybody and live out the rest of his life.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah, I would
try to cancel me now. See if you can catch me. Cancel this.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
She was only 15 years. Are we going to do all of them?
I don't see why not.
Since we're talking about The Man Who Would Be King.
Yes.
A movie that would be problematic, but it's saved by ...
Oh my goodness.
And we'll talk about that. I'll just ruin it right now. It is kind of problematic.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But we'll talk about it. And the reason we're talking about it is of course, a continuation, a revisiting of our famous Co-video segment. Does anybody know about it? Where we talk about classic films. And specifically films that we did not see.
Yes.
Because we want to see them.
That's right.
It's a cinema education. No, we're not doing that. But it's an education in cinema.
It's the same thing, but yeah. yes. And can you, maybe we'll wait till the segment, but maybe you could tell us like why you picked it.
I don't know why I picked it. I just wanted to see it.
Okay. I mean, that's a good enough reason. That's basically what I do.
I know what you wanted me to say, but that was your idea. Not my idea.
What was my idea?
Well, we both have a list. Mine's in my head.
Okay.
And you have written yours down.
I have written mine
down. And I thought that my pick would be Get Carter.
Sure. You're
in the mood for a Michael Caine movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Get Carter is a seminal one.
Yes.
And we watched Get Carter and we went, we can't talk about this. There's just nothing, there's just nothing to talk about. I'll give Get Carter this.
Hmm.
It's not hiding anything.
Oh, no. No. It wears words.
Yeah. It wears its blood-soaked pornography on its sleeve.
Yeah.
And if I'm making it sound a lot more exciting than it is. But it's just,
you are.
It's just a movie that came out at the right time for
yeah.
a certain class of performers and creators. The aforementioned Steve Coogan.
Yeah.
It was just something that, like, it would be like Pulp Fiction for Zack Snyder or whoever's probably like Eli Roth, you know, whoever's making movies today, whatever their thing was, this was that for a certain era of filmmaker. I'm not saying it's bad. I think there are touches of artistry to it, but you watch it and it's just like, okay, all right, great.
It
great.
Is not kind to women. Let me put it that
no.
way.
No, it's
and,
not.
Like, not, you can't argue that it is. I'm sorry. There's no argument there.
No, and I don't know if there is there a female equivalent? Get June Carter.
Oh my God.
She's like, you're gonna walk this line?
I don't know, because this is a British gangster film.
Right, but when you, I know, but like, it's almost like you can make these films. It's genre's weird because who knows where they come from, and eventually you make enough of them that now I'm just going to make, like, I'm making a superhero movie. I'm making a Tarantino-esque film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all had to suffer through in the 90s and the early aughts, these, like, independent movies with a bunch of white guys who steal, like, 25 grand, like, just a pittance, and then, like, Christopher Walken or whoever they could get who's going to slum it in this film is, like, the crime boss that's after them, you know. That was literally Suicide Kings. Things You Do in Denver When You're Dead. Just all these, like, crime films, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a genre, too. Nobody questions. But then, like, when you want to subvert that genre or you want to bring equality to that genre, it just sort of stands out.
It's like Ocean's 8?
Ocean's 8, which nobody asked for.
Yeah.
What was the Heights? What's the one where it was based on a comic book and it's like Olivia Spencer and Elizabeth Moss are going to...
Yeah, I don't remember.
Gonna, oh, and Melissa McCarthy are going to kill some people.
Right.
And I'm not saying that make those films, fine. I'm not saying they're good or bad because I haven't really seen them. But in my mind, they prove that we wasted our time with the original films.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, they maybe go like, this whole genre.
Why can't we have a female James Bond? We absolutely can. But I think it's going to make, like, the other 25 James Bond films seem pretty dumb. And they are dumb.
Wow.
They absolutely are.
I mean, yeah, they definitely have dumb elements.
But there's just something about, I don't know, maybe you should do this, maybe you shouldn't. It's your mileage may vary, but you put, like, a different head on when you watch a movie that's sexual politics or racial politics is not as progressive as now. Like, we saw...
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Like, we saw... Public Enemy. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, you know, it's about this character, Tommy or whatever his name is. And you know, he's, you know, there are women in the movie, but it's not like they're like really characters.
Right.
And there's a couple black guys in it. They were waiters.
Right.
And you just kind of go, oh, I'm not going to watch this movie. It was made 100 years ago. Screw you. Or you can just be like, okay, well, I just got a different sort of head on.
Right.
I'm in a lot of Star Trek groups on Facebook. Any day now, we're going to get to the news and the rest of the show. She got me started. I'm in a Star Trek group on Facebook, and a younger Star Trek fan did one of those posts asking questions, looking for answers, and said something to the effect of, like, you know, I don't want to watch the original series because I know it's horribly sexist. But,
oh, my God.
But I still want to know, you know, I want the information. So how do I get the information about the original series, you know, without having to watch it? And
so what are people
some commenter, it was a white guy. It was a white guy, but he's like, just watch it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, it was made in a different time.
Yes.
And you just go, okay, well, I don't like that part, but there's a lot of other good stuff here. Just watch it. But this person has just heard from other
fans. Right.
How sexist it is. And first of all, I would challenge that it is the most sexist thing you've ever seen. It is absolutely not.
I don't think it is.
But, honestly. Yeah, like, what? How do you watch Casablanca? Are you mad that he's got a piano player who's black or something? You know what I mean? Like,
no.
You just have to think it was a different time. This isn't my grandpa. I'm not letting my grandpa get away with saying something racist because he's from a different time. This is a different thing. This is a cultural, right. It's an art piece of art, a cultural artifact for a different time.
Yeah, no,
like
I agree.
Like Star Wars on the NES. Let's talk about the news. Well, speaking of James Bond and how complicated its legacy is, it's making things even more complicated because I'm sure that you know or have heard that Amazon wants to buy MGM.
Wait, what? No, I hadn't heard this.
Yes.
Amazon wants to buy MGM?
The only thing we need is for Amazon to get into the film business. And I know there's Amazon films, but they're a joke.
Yes.
But we definitely don't need them to take over one of the big five, six, four or five studios.
No, I don't want this. I think this is a really bad idea. Stay away, Jeff Bezos.
I don't even know who owns Metro Goldwyn Mayer.
No.
Probably the Chinese or something like that, or maybe a majority group. But the current valuation that they're working with is $9 billion, which seems like a lot for MGM.
Holy cow.
But when you think of the fact that MGM has the Pink Panther... This is what Variety's going with. And what? Legally Blonde.
Why are we...
And James Bond.
Okay, I wouldn't put those three films or genre, you know, groups of films in the same category even.
Well,
you know,
I don't know about the Pink Panther, although there certainly has been quite a few Pink Panther films that have made money over the years.
Yeah.
And Legally Blonde goes way beyond just the two Legally Blonde films.
I know that. There's a musical.
As a franchise, yeah. So you got all that going on, but then of course you've got James Bond.
Yeah, James Bond is just, it's one of those things like...
Is this a thing where Broccoli Woman...
Wow,
Broccoli and the
woman.
Family.
Uh-huh.
Cubby's been gone for a while.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, where they're overvaluing it or something like that. Because remember, they own it all. But mm-hmm. the distribution or something or some stake, some percentage is with MGM as well. But
sure.
they survived the United Artists thing.
Yeah.
The Sony thing. They've made it all the way here. So they're not going to let go of this. They own this thing. And are they saying, like, what if Amazon bought MGM but then didn't get Bond? Would that... open up a feeding frenzy, a shop around auction for Bond?
I think so. I mean, I think that, like...
Will there ever be another James Bond movie ever again, since this one's taken 3 years to come out?
Well, that's another really great question, because, like, we're at this point where we don't know where the series is going to go.
If they buy it, do we get a female Bond? Amazon Studios and CEO Jeff Bezos presents Jane Bond.
Well, first of all, better name. Get a better name. How about
with Paula Cole singing the title track?
No,
I don't want to do anymore.
Jamie Bond. Like that's better than Jane Bond. I don't know.
They're halfway there because Lashana Lynch is playing 007 in the new movie.
I know. Why not just make her the next James Bond?
I think that is an option, but there are racist considerations to be made in Hollywood.
Yeah. I understand that, but I make
my
me
favorite
angry.
Story is about how they took that old TV show with what's his name, The Equalizer, and then put Denzel in it.
Mm-hmm.
And The Equalizer was like not even a sleeper hit. Like it was a hit.
Yeah.
It was just some movie based on some dumb CBS show.
Right.
And it made a ton of money.
Because then, Denzel was in it.
Yeah. And then we saw this in the Sony email hack, right? They're like, okay, let's do it. Expendables 2, not Expendables, Equalizer 2.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the executives were like, I don't think that's really a good idea because, black doesn't travel and we really need to focus on the international market. Yeah.
That's so stupid. I want to know how well Black Panther did, overseas, worldwide.
$2 billion.
Yeah. So what the hell are you talking about, Sony? I don't know. I don't.
The Chinese loved Black Panther.
Right. Now, that tells you something.
I'm guessing Hidden Figures didn't come out in China.
I'm guessing it didn't
But
either.
They loved Black Panther.
Yeah. Give them a chance to like Hidden Figures is what I'm saying.
Well.
Maybe their mileage might vary.
Okay, I don't know whose side I'm on anymore. Definitely release a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Maybe sure. Like firing up the projectors and popping the popcorn. Maybe don't do that. I mean, there are considerations there, but don't like completely starve them out.
But you can't tell me that an action movie with a black star wouldn't sell. I think that totally sells. So
it's called The Equalizer. And
yeah,
it did.
I know.
Yeah, Hollywood makes terrible decisions. So do just filmmakers in general. Filmmakers like Franco Nero.
Okay.
Who has cast Kevin Spacey in his most recent film.
Wow, that was a dumb move.
L'Uomo Che Disegno Dio.
Which means what?
Something God.
Okay, what is this film about? Do I even want to know?
It's a low budget film. It doesn't matter what it's about.
I mean, I don't know who this guy is.
Franco Nero?
Yeah.
Django! Oh. Django!
Why is he doing this?
Because he didn't care. And okay. I bet you got him for a song.
Oh, I'm sure he did, because yeah. I'm sure Kevin Spacey just wants to freaking
Emmy,
work.
Golden Globe winning actor.
Yeah.
Probably got him for a hot lunch.
Yeah, I think you probably did. Well, I mean, when do we talk about, like, if you're canceled, like, what's the road back? But I don't really feel like Kevin Spacey has really done
He's not
much.
Apologized at all.
No, he's not apologized. There's no restitution.
And I don't know how much power the real life Frank Underwood has, but some of those people that accused him are dead.
Like, okay. What do you mean they're
I mean,
dead?
When the plaintiff dies, the yeah. suit is over.
Oh, yeah.
That kind I of thing.
Okay. That's all right. That's upsetting. What's his name? Why can't I think of his name right now?
I'll help you.
Yeah, Star Trek.
William Shatner.
No.
Anthony Rapp.
Yeah, Anthony Rapp.
You're the big Rent fan.
I know, and I just went right out of my head. I mean, he's got to be upset about. I mean, but it's like, do you? I don't know. Like, do you want somebody's, like, career to be over, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I think so.
How are other people reacting about this?
Career sexual predator? Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Get rid of that guy.
Yeah, get rid of that guy.
They thought they were going to get rid of me, but turns out I was going to get rid of them.
Great, he's going to do a voiceover for his uncanceling.
Like him to do a voiceover for his funeral.
Oh my goodness.
Let's talk about Zack Snyder. He was answering questions from fans and previous collaborators. Probably more collaborators than fans, but who can say?
Okay.
And he was basically, they were getting a little personal on him.
All right.
And of all people, Sarah Polley, who he worked on Dawn of the Dead with,
okay,
asked him, a lot of people see a right-wing political undercurrent in some of your films. Is a lot of people you?
I think we can read that as her.
I wouldn't disagree.
Yeah.
But there is no a lot of people when you say a lot of people, is
yeah,
there?
Yeah, probably not.
She continues, where do you stand politically and has that changed over the years?
Which is an interesting question to
and
ask
then,
an artist.
I'm not done.
Okay.
These are all text. In parentheses, bonus hint, don't evade the question. Love you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Passive aggressive.
Sarah Polley goes for Zack Snyder's throat.
Oh my goodness.
And he essentially said, I vote Democrat. I vote Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm a true lover of individual rights.
Okay.
Oh, that's a funny way to say libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes on, I've been a super strong advocate of women's rights and a women's right to choose. And basically, like he says, I think he says the word right or rights.
Mm-hmm.
14 times, conservatively.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So it's funny that this, I love this little drama, because I love all the things that people do. It's very impossible. The human animal is not built to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's very impossible or very difficult to do something and mean something else, but say a different thing.
Yeah, I know what you're
Do you know what I mean? There's a reason
saying,
that we are swindled by con men and garage mechanics, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know, 8-year-old girls.
What?
they're always trying to tell you you need work that you don't need. And it's because we're built to be honest, you know, we're built to read each other. And so I just love seeing or just reading into things because unfortunately I think I am one of the broken people that, or maybe I just imagine all this. I don't know. But the point is that clearly she's not satisfied with his political affiliations.
Uh-huh.
Clearly they've had discussions about this before.
Sounds like it.
Clearly she felt the need to waste her question on trying to pin him down. So that's her side. And then on his side, clearly he doesn't consider himself to be on the right. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't consider himself to be a supporter of definitely where the party is now, the Republican Party. But also, he definitely wants you to know how much he cares about rights. And women and their rights.
Yeah, right.
But also rights.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, you're a libertarian.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Uh-huh.
It's not. I mean, it's kind of a dirty word now, but I understand why you won't say that word. So you are a default Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a libertarian. And the best part is, here's the best part. No one was confused about this. Nobody at all is confused about that.
Mm-hmm.
We all know he's naming, you know, things the Fountainhead in his Batman movies or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Nobody has any doubt in their mind mm-hmm. about how he feels.
Yeah.
But I just love that it all has to be delivered and received like this.
Do you think that it's weird. It's a weird thing, but I feel like it's very Zack Snyder, for one thing, to deliver it this way. But do you feel like the women's right thing is in a way his response to Gal Gadot, like saying that, like, talking about recently how she wanted...
It's probably on his mind.
Yeah. Like her character to be different, and like he was taking things away from her character and that sort of thing.
She said that about him?
Didn't she? Am I remembering
Joss Whedon,
wrong?
Right?
Oh, is it Joss Whedon?
Well, I don't know. You brought it up. I'm just saying.
I'm confused. You're right.
In the zeitgeist, her problem currently is with. But it's funny because Joss Whedon, creep that he is, will write all day long about women doing this and women doing that.
Right. But
so
like,
I don't, you've got me at sixes and sevens. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I think I was thinking of Joss Whedon, but maybe I'm
although
confused.
You know what's really empowering?
You're writhing.
I'm doing the baby doll dance from Sucker Punch.
Having the Wonder Woman theme song
That's
play over and over again.
Super. yeah. It wasn't the Wonder Woman song. I don't think they had the.
They didn't?
You know, it was...
Cause it was a variation?
You know, like in... when anybody mentioned spirituality in Arrested Development and that song, that...
Yeah, right.
Song comes, that's what it sounded like.
Oh, okay.
But it didn't use her theme because I don't think... I'm not sure if he had the rights to it or how that works.
That's so weird to
You think
about.
That you would just do that, right? You
yes.
would just have the Wonder Woman theme.
Yes, right? You're DC.
But this is his... No, it's not. It's Zack Snyder's universe.
Oh, my God. I don't care.
There's so much more Zack Snyder news, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
He's a no chairs on set guy, speaking of how he treats his actors.
I don't like this because I think the actors need a break. I think actors need to
He's on down. Some kind of tour because he was talking to Hugh Jackman for Variety in their Actors on Actors series. And he talked about the fact that, that was Christopher Nolan that was doing that because that's where this originally came from.
Mm.
Remember, Christopher Nolan said you can't sit down on a set. If you got time to lean, you got time to act or whatever it is.
Okay. All right.
And Zack Snyder backed him up.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I see both sides to it because it's like, we don't want you to lose your energy and we want you to come with energy on set and everything.
You're paying me $5.7 million mm-hmm. because you believe in my energy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I think I can sit down.
Why don't you let me sit down?
I know. Like, you get a freaking chair. Why don't I get a freaking chair?
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And I think it's...
And it's for two, and it's two balls out, you know, dick in the mouth male filmmakers who want you to know how important what they're doing is. And
right.
one of them is just running the film backwards through the projector. And the other one is just remaking movies or making terrible superhero movies. Get over the both of yourselves.
Have either of them been actors before?
Oh, definitely. They must have, right?
Well, then, like, they should know better. they should treat their actors better, don't you think? If you were an actor and you're a
director, I can see now, Christopher Nolan in short pants doing a monologue or something like that.
Sure.
Certainly.
Sure, yeah.
Well, speaking of... It just kept worse and worse.
Oh, no.
I'm front-loading all the bad stuff.
Okay.
Speaking of favorite people of ours who work in the DC Universe...
Oh, boy.
Henry Cavill is going to star in Lionsgate's Highlander reboot.
Yeah, I heard about this.
From the John Wick director. Which one? Doesn't matter.
I hate this, and I know you...
Actually, I'll make a joke out of it. It's the guy named Chad. The Chris. Chad from John Wick.
Okay.
Is going right. to remake Highlander. You know why Highlander works? And I only mean the first film.
Yeah.
None of the other films work.
Because it's unpretentious?
It's sensitive.
Well, yeah.
It is definitely overly masculine.
Oh!
It literally starts, you know, at a wrestling match, and then two guys try to stick their... they have a sword fight in the parking lot.
Right.
But it's also sensitive. Connor McCloud, speaking of Jedi, Connor McCloud wins because he is more human than his opponent. You know, they are immortals. They are not human. We don't know what they are, but he's a fan of man. You know, he cares about humanity. He is, what's the word I'm looking for?
Empathetic.
Empathetic.
Yeah.
And the Kurgan is not.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
No, the Kurgan is... He's just out for himself.
Now, if you told me that we're just remaking it beat for beat and Henry Cavill is playing the Kurgan, I'm in. Ugh. We're going to lose a lot. We're going to lose a lot going from the actor that we had to Henry Cavill, but...
What is his name? Why can't I think of his
name? I was kind of hoping we could gloss over
it. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My
brain thing is doing its thing.
Yeah.
Clancy Brown.
So great. Freaking fantastic.
Here's Henry Cavill. I have something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away.
Yeah, right.
That's my Henry Cavill.
Very good.
Thank you.
A
lot of it's facial, too.
By just not emoting anything?
Yeah, I mean, you can hear the smirks, I think.
I think you can.
Is that his problem? You think he doesn't take anything seriously? You know, like an actor sometimes is just like, I'm cooler than this thing that I'm doing.
I don't know if that's what it is. He seems disingenuous in every single role he
disingenuous
does.
Too.
Yeah, disingenuous. Yeah. And when you see him on interviews and everything, that's another. He seems disingenuous in that too. So maybe.
Oh no, no, I really. Oh no, his interviews. That's the most. Yeah, that's Henry Cavill. That you're seeing the real man there.
Okay. Well, I just
when he
don't
talks
like
about computers and he's doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Smiling at underage girls, like that's the Henry Cavill that we know and love.
Okay. I'm going to stop talking.
Let's go full gossip. Let's just make this, let's call this the shit list or something like that. And we can just go after everybody. What do you think?
Okay, fine.
Two tin pot Perez Hiltons.
Yeah, I don't get
why. Or one.
All right. I don't get why people like him.
Let's talk about the fact that Dwayne The Rock Johnson is playing Crypto the Superdog in the DC League of Super Pets film.
Okay. Are we supposed to be excited about that?
No. In fact, just turn the recorder off. No, I guess we're not.
I'm just... Their animated films are varying quality widely.
But what if this was just funny, goofy pets? You don't think that this is going to be like Crypto's going to rip somebody's throat out?
God, I hope not.
Streaky the super cat is going to, you know, eat their face once they're dead. Comet the super horse is going to kick their head off and then, you know,
no,
have sex
I
with
don't
the
think it's going to
windpipe.
Be like that. I really hope it's
right.
Not.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Okay.
How did they beat the Pet Avengers to press? That's what I want to know. Or is there a Pet Avengers? There's not an animated Pet Avengers thing, is there?
Not yet. No. Probably DC was thinking about what can we do to beat Marvel. Probably.
I think they think that every day.
Yeah.
I think they get up every morning.
Yeah.
Collectively.
Yes.
And they go, "What's Marvel having for breakfast?
Yeah.
What time did Marvel get up?
They send spies over to Marvel.
We got to get up earlier.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We gotta do twice as many crunches as they're doing, and you know, eat twice as many bran flakes.
Are you training for something?
No, I don't know.
Are DC and Marvel?
They're in competition some kind of with each other.
Physical competition with each other.
Yeah, their physical out, like their what they're turning out.
Killing it.
All right.
Let's talk about the Marvel side and see what they're eating with their bran flakes and their crunches. Let's see what's going on over there.
All right.
the hell? Looks like Gina Carano's Rangers of the New Republic show is no longer in active development.
Not surprised. I guess I'm kind of surprised this is new news. You know, I guess I kind of just figured since...
they don't want the smoke. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Because...
No. Why take the hassle?
Why take 500 jobs away from people?
Uh-huh.
Because of what she said. So it's called recast.
Oh, right.
But I think they don't want the smoke in this case. If they're going to get it for canceling the show. But if they went ahead with the show and recast the show, they would have to endure...
That's true.
The racist, sexist criticism every day throughout the life of the entire show, up to and including its Blu-ray release or whatever. If you cancel it, people complain now, and now there's nothing left to talk about except another couple interviews with Ben Shapiro in advance of the film that they're doing.
Right. I mean, how far?
So thanks, Gina Carano. You killed an entire character.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
We could have just Terrence Howard did this thing, and we're done. But now it's all dead.
It upsets me because I actually really liked this character. And I think it has, potential to be something. And now that character is just gone. And then also, like, if people were signed up and contracts were signed, now people are out of a job. And I don't like that either.
I have no idea how that works. You just get a call. It's like, stop drawing. Stop.
Probably.
Stop pre-vising the X-Wing fight or something like that.
Yeah, like we're not doing this
you know what?
Anymore.
They never threw anything away in Star Wars, right?
Probably not.
Jero Torvald, the guy who is the Jedi Master to Cal in Jedi Fallen Order.
Yes.
Is that alien is the original design for Han Solo. That's how Han Solo
That's
was going
so
to look
weird.
Before they went, maybe the hot guy from American Graffiti?
And we'll put him in a vest. That'll be cool.
What? Yeah. I mean, we got that.
Yeah, right.
yeah. So they never throw anything away in Star Wars.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So, yeah, if those people were working, hopefully they won't throw people away. Those people will be folded into other productions.
I hope so.
And they'll work. Yeah, they'll be off to the races.
Okay, great.
Hopefully. Yes. Let's talk about things that are persisting on HBO. Raised by Wolves, coming. Season 2. Hopefully we'll explain what the hell happened in Season 1. And they have cast 6 new actors. Now I'm going to read these names.
Okay.
And I want you, get a cookie if you've ever heard any of these names before. Are you ready?
Oh, God. Probably haven't.
Peter Christofferson. No relation.
No, I don't think I've heard that.
I don't think it doesn't look like him at all.
Okay.
Selena Jones.
Uh-uh.
Morgan Santo.
Nope.
James Harkness. No relation.
Oh.
To Jack Harkness.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
I was
going
to say, just kick out. That's him.
Whoa. All a joke, right? But probably shouldn't do it anyways. Just saying.
It's not great.
No, it's not.
They canceled his audio drama, by the way.
Did they really?
Yeah. Kim Engelbrecht.
Uh-uh.
She's on The Flash. I don't know either. And Jennifer Tseng.
No, I don't know any of these
Okay,
names.
Then it's all new blood.
Are these like older versions of the kids, do you think? I have no idea.
Great question.
Okay, all
right. Great question.
All right.
You know what?
Yeah.
Let's see. Three women. 4 women, 2 men. 1, 2, 3. I mean, making assumptions.
Uh-huh.
Half of them POC. Maybe.
Maybe. Okay.
5 adults and a child.
Okay. All right. I mean, maybe. I mean, this
it would be dumb if another ship crashed.
Yeah, but it's sci-fi. There's like weird things going on.
It's not sci-fi. It's HBO.
Yeah, I know. It's on HBO. So, like, you know, maybe there could have been, like, a weird time loop or something. I don't know. They could have come up with some reason why there would be new people on this
I think there
is planet.
Already a weird time loop.
Yeah, I think
there?
So, too.
Yeah.
We'll probably have to watch another video explaining the new season.
Yeah.
But I'm glad.
Wait till the Alt-Shift-X video comes out.
Yeah. I enjoyed the first season, even if I didn't totally completely understand it.
All right. So. Well, I enjoy talking about Michael Caine movies, so let's just get through the rest of the stuff here, okay?
Okay.
Here we are. John Boyega reuniting with Joe Cornish for Attack the Block 2.
Wow. I'm kind of surprised Boyega wants to do a second Attack the Block. But
now.
Yeah.
Are you? Because it's like Kevin Spacey, but the other way. You're too good of a person to let things slide, and so now your career is in trouble. Hopefully not that. That's not true.
I hope not.
Although Joe Cornish's career is in trouble, too. Okay. So they're going to help each other. Now, okay. I like this idea, and I hope they go the whole way with it, because John Boyega, very young-looking. If Jodie Whittaker wants to come back, same thing. We could just say it's next week, but... Those kids go to prison at the end of that thing, don't they?
Do they really?
They save the world from the aliens, and they're black. They get hauled off by the cops, right?
Oh, my God.
So go the whole way with it. 10 years have gone by, and they've been, you know, in and out of jail for 10 years. This is terrible. This is depressing.
This is really depressing.
This is a depressing movie.
Yeah.
But the first one wasn't, like, super happy.
No, it wasn't.
And we continue to fight aliens while looking at the real-world social issues.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea. So,
thank you.
Yeah, and then maybe they don't go to jail at the end. How about that?
Yeah. I think it's short. What else is going on? Did we talk about, I feel like we've talked about this. We did. This is from Natalie Emanuel is going to star in Drag. No, wait, we didn't. Natalie Emanuel.
Mm-hmm.
For Harper, Bripper. A man's name from the Fast and Furious films, the hacker.
Oh, the hacker who was in Game of Thrones as well.
And yes.
I can't think of her Fast and Furious
yes,
name.
Yes, future but, yeah. assault victim.
Oh, gosh.
From Tyrese and Ludacris.
Yeah, right.
She's going to play, we don't know what she's going to play. She's going to be in a Dracula-inspired horror movie.
Okay.
Called The Bride.
She's probably going to be the bride, right?
The titular bride.
Probably. Huh. Okay. Interesting. I mean, as long as they do a new spin on it, right? Like Dracula, do a new spin on it. That's what I say. I like her. I'd like to see her in more things. I think she's good. I don't feel like she's really gotten the opportunity.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I don't think she's good at all.
Oh, okay.
Not really.
I don't feel like they've really... The roles that she's been in, they've
well, it's
really
tough
given
when you,
her...
Yeah, you literally play an abused slave. But then she played like a funky hacker. And it was like, oh, same thing? It's the same thing then. Okay, good.
But they like Ludacris was doing all the hacking stuff.
Like, look, I'm on your side.
You bring somebody in who's specifically a hacker, and Ludacris is doing.
I'm on your side. I just don't think that she's
hell?
That great.
Okay.
Fun fact, the script is by Blair Butler. Of Attack of the Show fame.
Okay.
They're video game correspondent on Attack of the Show.
Oh, okay.
So there all is right. life after G4 for all of us.
That is good. That is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope that works out. Hopefully that'll be entertaining.
I just hope that... I looked all over and I couldn't find what studio it was.
Okay.
I mean...
Is it possible they're not assigned to a
Dark
studio
Dark Universe,
yet?
Right? Yeah. That's what it sounds like.
That is what it sounds like.
But I couldn't see. I didn't see Universal anywhere.
Huh. Okay.
I'm a bad
That's
news
interesting.
Person. Really?
No, I don't think you
is what it is. Did you hear about the Superman animated series that's coming to HBO Max starring Jack Quaid? Great.
Oh, really?
Starring Jack Quaid!
Oh, I'm super excited! I mean, a Superman animated series could be good. Do we know who's like behind, like the creative team behind it, like producing it or writing it or anything?
I'll tell you, it's produced by Warner Brothers Animation.
Okay, that makes sense.
And the one of the guys who did the Voltron Netflix show and one of the girls who did the She-Ra show are co-producing it.
Well, that has potential because those shows are both really well received. So,
and if you look behind you, this is a sample of the art. So that's where we're at. It's Superman Lower Decks.
I don't hate it.
It's Lower Decks
Superman. But I don't love
it. That's Lois.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
With like.
It's going to be a real goofer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, some of the Superman movies could be goofy, but.
I have a hammer.
Okay.
I could stop being a nerd. I'm going to go hammer a piece of wood. That's what you do, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I could just give up this nerd life.
Because all we
give
do is complain.
Give me a wrench.
Yeah. Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That's my only other option.
I know.
Right? if I'm going to stop being a nerd, because apparently I hate all the nerd things.
Did you ever think you would be here, like...
complaining about this?
Yeah.
No!
Like, growing up, did you ever think, gosh, I really wish there wasn't so much nerdy stuff because I'm going to hate half of it?
No, but if you had told me... Uh-huh. Well, I guess if you tell me, then I already know. If I posited a world where everything was nerd stuff...
Yeah.
I absolutely would have said, most of it will be crap.
Yeah.
Like Theodore Sturgeon says, 90% of it will be crap. I absolutely could have told you that. When I was a young lad and we talked about like, man, why isn't there a Daredevil TV show?
Uh-huh.
He's a lawyer.
Right.
It's a procedural. He yes. beats people up.
Yes.
They did it. It was fine. But that's all I wanted. I didn't also want a Stargirl show, you know,
yeah,
and,
right.
and a Legends of Tomorrow show and a Titan show, F Batman. Like,
and I
if
know.
You had told me that all those things were going to, of course they're going to be bad. Of course they are.
I know.
And this is going to be bad too. Bruce Timm, J.J. Abrams, and Matt Reeves are joining forces for a new Batman animated series.
Okay, I heard Bruce Timm and J.J. Abrams. Who was the third name?
Matt Reeves is the old-timey barber, Sawbones, who's doing the Robert Pattinson Batman movie.
Yeah, I know movie. He's doing the... I just didn't catch his name. Oh, my goodness. I don't know how I feel about this.
It's an HBO Max and Cartoon Network co-production called Batman Caped Crusader. Batman, he's got a couple different things we could call him, and this time it's Caped Crusader.
That makes it sound like it's going to be goofy, too. Do you think it's also going to be goofy?
What, because of the K sounds?
I don't know. Caped Crusader sounds goofy.
Yeah, it isn't like Batman Dark Lunch or something
right, right,
like that.
Right, 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 right. Yeah. Batman, my childhood sucked.
I'll
you
have
know?
A Cobb salad.
Yeah.
And vichyssoise soup. I like my vengeance like I like my soup cold.
I like my coffee like I like my night. Dark and no cream.
Why is there cream in his night?
Because it's snow, light. I don't know. He doesn't like it.
I like my coffee like I like my crime, dark and filtered.
I was gonna say dark and gritty.
Yeah, all right, that works. Yeah, don't make my coffee like the crime in Gotham City. I don't want it dark and gritty. I want it like the bat signal.
Right.
Light. And with a rodent in it. Let's talk about another thing that's going on for the DCs and the HBO Max. A lot of announcements recently.
Yeah.
Of course, there is a Green Lantern HBO Max series in the works.
Yes. I heard about that. Is it live action, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It so far, so here's what we know. Finn Wittrock,
okay,
has been cast, or actually HBO was not talking about it, but rumors are that actor Finn Wittrock has been cast as Guy Gardner,
okay,
the Green Lantern,
right,
and recently Jeremy Irvine has been cast as Alan Scott.
Okay, I don't think I know who that is either.
I don't know who either of these people are.
No.
Because I don't know why I do this anymore. Oh. But I will tell you that Jeremy Irvine is gay.
Okay.
And he will be playing the gay character, Alan Scott, the
okay.
Lantern.
Okay. Well, that's probably a good thing. All right. What do you expect or want to see from a Green Lantern TV show? I never actually saw the film. I think obviously they want to.
Can I just stop it? Can I just stop you right there?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's gay or not.
Oh.
I'll tell you that he is from Gamlingay, Cambridgeshire, England.
No.
But that's all I've got.
No.
I just assumed he was gay.
Oh, okay.
But all right. I want to retract that right now on the air.
Please.
I don't know if he's gay. My producer's telling me. We don't know if he's gay.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to look at his Instagram.
Okay. Whoa. Okay.
It's private.
All right. I mean...
Although it says FC World. Is this the right guy?
I don't know.
This guy is this guy's a loose cannon.
Okay. All right.
And he has type 1 diabetes.
Okay.
I know that, but I don't know if he's dating a man.
That's a lot of information.
I don't know if he's dating a man, though.
That's okay. I know that you at least used to be a Green Lantern fan for the comics. Like, what would you know? Who's your favorite Green Lantern?
Simon Baz. No, that's not true. Does it have to be one of the main Green Lanterns?
No, it doesn't have to.
I kind of like Kilowog.
Okay. All right.
That's a good question. Is it okay to not have an answer?
Yes.
Because I'll tell you what. The Green Lantern Corps is my favorite character. I like when it's an ensemble piece.
Yeah.
Hal's fine. Mm-hmm. There's just like not much to him.
Sure.
It's weird. It's funny that it makes sense that he pairs up with Green Arrow, because Green Arrow's got a lot going on, and Hal must just listen to Green Arrow's stories and be like, wow, I wish my life was like that, because I'm just Hal Jordan. I'm boring. Yeah.
So how is Guy Gardner different from Hal? And like, why did they choose Guy Gardner?
I apologize to the audience.
Oh, okay.
Clearly, this is going to be multiple Green Lanterns, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what they're going to do.
Okay.
Hal Jordan is just the hero's hero. He's, you know, it helps that, I don't know if they were thinking about this. Of course they were thinking about this when they created him. What was Gil Kane thinking when he created Guy Gardner or Green Lantern or Hal Jordan? He's obstinate because you need willpower to be a good Green Lantern.
Okay.
But what if we took that and we gave it steroids?
Uh-huh.
And you get Guy Gardner. Guy Gardner is a brash, you know, sexist, probably not anymore, but jerk. And he is, you know, completely, he's probably the perfect Green Lantern because he's completely convinced he's right all the time.
Wow. Okay. I'm a little terrified, honestly. Okay.
John Stewart in the cartoons is awesome. John Stewart in the comics is awesome.
In the cartoons.
Not the same character.
Yeah. Yeah. We see that a lot. I feel like they did a lot with the cartoon versions of these characters that they don't necessarily do with the comic versions. But
right. And Alan Scott is a totally different thing. Alan Scott was the Golden Age Green Lantern. It has nothing to do with the current, you know, or current Silver Age Green Lantern.
Okay.
But they have, through retcons, you know, made a connection basically between his ring and the Star Heart and the whatever the Green Lanterns use.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I'm interested to see if they can pull it off.
Effed it all up.
Okay. Cool.
Because there's yellow and red and purple diamonds and horseshoes and
made it real complicated.
As this show's becoming.
Well, I hope it's does better than the movie, and that like maybe people will like Green Lantern.
What movie?
After the Green Lantern film.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing.
Boy, me and Ryan Reynolds both forgot about that.
Yeah, everybody wants to forget about it.
One more story. Kevin Feige has admitted, or at least he said in an interview recently, that Marvel should not have whitewashed Tilda Swinton's Doctor Strange character.
Okay.
And all now right. An editorial.
Oh, boy.
Duh.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
Here's the thing. I feel like we're learning this recently.
Hmm.
Marvel makes mistakes.
Yes.
But the key to their success is never admitting that they make mistakes until it's irrelevant.
Oh, okay. You think it's irrelevant now?
So in a couple years, I can't wait to hear Kevin Feige or his replacement say it was a mistake to not recast Black Panther.
It is. I'm telling you right now that's a mistake.
No, it absolutely. Clearly, on its face, it is. But yeah. Marvel stands will not admit that it is because Marvel can't clearly do any wrong. But they have and they did.
Yes.
I mean, The Adventures of a Celtic Woman are something that I want to see, but maybe not in this.
Yeah, right.
What does that even mean? She's got a knot tattoo or something?
What does that even mean?
I understand that the Celts are Celts around anymore? Were you implying that she's so old that she is a Celt technically because she's 700 years old? Is that what that's supposed to be?
Because
when you just
know.
Say, oh no, no, we got rid of the Asian person, she's Celtic. Well, first of all, that pretty much is the opposite of what a POC is, being a Celt.
Yeah, yes. I would agree with that.
So that's a problem. But anyway, yes, he admitted that they should not have eliminated the character, and perhaps they could have done their presto, change-o, woke, rearrange-o, and made something out of the character that's relevant to today without, you know, like they did with the Mandarin. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that he probably was only asked that because of the imminent release of Shang-Chi.
Probably.
And was put in the corner, and you know, we made Tony Leung is the Mandarin, and there's no, you know, gongs or Fu Manchu mustaches or anything.
Right.
Fine.
Yes.
Could have easily done that.
Yes. Do you think they'll recast the Ancient One at some point?
She's dead.
Yeah, I know she's dead.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
All right. The Ancienter One. You thought she was old.
Oh, my gosh.
This person's really old. Gotta cast Cher.
Oh, come on.
The minstrel boy to the war is gone.
Ship is only 15. Yeah, so.
Two great tastes that taste great together?
Haggis and maybe a brandy?
Tea? Oh, I was going to say tea. Brandy. That makes sense, actually. Yes.
What if you found out that the whole time, it was just tea the whole time?
Like it wasn't alcohol at all?
Michael, I don't get saying Michael Caine's praises, you know, in the earlier segment. And don't at me if, you know, it turns out he beat his first wife or something.
Oh, holy cow.
At this point, you'd expect anything from anybody. All I'm saying is heard good stories about Michael Caine.
Yes.
And has a good attitude about his life and the incredible success that he has been given.
Yes.
And it doesn't keep him from doing bad movies.
No, it does
not.
Not
that this isn't one.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was looking through the oeuvre of Michael Caine recently and thinking about all the films that I've seen him in and just loved his work and this and that. And I knew that he did some stinkers, knew that he was in some bad films.
Oh, yeah.
You know, famously he did, is it Jaws 3 or 4? I think it was probably Jaws.
Oh, God.
Well, I guess it's the one that he was in. I think it was Jaws 3 for a house. You know, he bought his house in Malibu with that money. And he was very practical about this business of show that he's in.
Yes.
So I was looking at his filmography and I actually found a Guardian article.
Okay.
Let me finish. That was like the 50 best films of Michael Caine. And I'm like, oh, just 50? Mm-hmm. And to pare that thing down.
Uh-huh.
And I started going through it and I was like, oh, maybe we like some of these ironically or just because he's in them. Number 10 was Muppet Christmas Carol. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
He's great in it. And it's one of the better adaptations of A Christmas Carol.
Sure.
But that's number 10?
Right.
And then the other ones, you can absolutely guess what they are.
Uh-huh.
And by taking the Christopher Nolan ones out too, maybe The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight was the only Nolan movie in the top 10.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, the point is, number one was The Man Who Would Be King.
Yes.
And having seen the film.
Uh-huh.
And having seen his career and having just given you this rant about the quality of his films, I started to think, maybe this guy's been in more bad films than good films.
I think there might be something to that.
Yeah. For every Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, there's the Male of the Species or something like that.
Right. I think we just like Michael Caine.
Oh, no, we absolutely do. But maybe he's eaten out on that Jaws story a little too much here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Maybe,
yes.
Maybe at some point the joke became the reality and he's just in anything.
Yeah. What, how many houses does he have, I guess, would be my next
question.
Oh, he's
probably got a couple.
Yeah, right.
And, it, like, you know, A Dress to Kill, that's a big swing gone awry, right?
Yes.
You know, you're working with a, you know, famous filmmaker. He wasn't that famous at that point, but anyway.
Up-and-coming filmmaker at the time.
Sure.
Sure, yeah.
Angie Dickinson's in this thing.
Right.
Let's do this.
Right, exactly. Oh, that movie.
So, yeah, a man who just loves acting and will tell you about it. At length, Master Wayne.
Very deliberately.
I'm terrified to ask, what happens in this film?
Yeah, what happens in this film? So, I guess we should say that besides Sean Connery and Michael Caine, Christopher Plummer is in this movie.
For all too short a time.
Yes. Most of this film is a retelling of events that have already happened. So Christopher Plummer plays Rudyard Kipling, who I guess this...
is the author of the book this is based on.
Yes, exactly. And Michael Caine plays this guy. They call him Peachy, but his name is also Danny. and him and Sean Connery basically...
Sean Connery's Danny.
Oh, Sean Connery's Danny?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Sorry. Michael Caine's Peachy.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, right. Peachy runs into Kipling.
Scene by scene.
Okay, fine. But this is important, right? He runs into Kipling at a train station. He tries to pickpocket him. He sees that he's a Freemason. He's like, oh, crap, I have to get this back. There's this whole song and dance about getting the watch back. But, like, they want to get his attention. And him and Connery have this crazy plan that they're going to go to this other country. They're in India. And they're going to go to this other country, Kafiristan, and they're basically taking advantage of the fact that there are people there who are very divided, and they're going to bring them together, and they're going to kind of make somebody king, and they're going to get all these riches, and then they're going to leave.
It's Afghanistan.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is their great plan.
Not exactly united.
No.
Especially at this time.
Right. So this is their great plan, and they're going to get there through this mountain pass and everything.
Khyber Pass.
And, yeah. And why do they tell Kipling this? Does he help back them?
Totally strange. I know.
I'm not sure why they tell him or, like, they let him in on
this.
Because
he has to tell the story. I thought that, too. Like, maybe he's paying for this whole thing. He gave him money.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think they just went off on their own.
Okay. All right, just confirming, because I was like, all right. So they go through the Khyber Pass. It's this huge, this whole thing is a huge, long adventure. They have mules. They don't have mules. They're going through snow. It's this huge, long thing. They finally get to Kafiristan. They find that they come to this settlement, and there's this guy there who... I think he was part of the British army at one point.
He is a Gurkha.
A Gurkha. Okay.
And that is like special forces, like mountain unit of native soldiers who worked for the British army.
Right. Yeah. And he specifically asked them if they're English. And they're like, yes. And so he's like super excited, and he comes out and he talks to them. And his name is Billy Fish. And he can translate for them, and so they kind of start training the people that are in this this village and everything. They're like, okay, you're going to fight, and then we're going to fight these other, you know, like settlements or, you know, areas that are nearby, and we're going to kind of like take that over. And, you know, the plan is to make somebody their king. But so they're successful in training these people, and they take over different land. Everything seems to be going well, and at one point they're fighting, and Danny gets hit with an arrow in the chest, but he doesn't bleed, and so the people think that he's a god. And not just any god, they think that he is a descendant or the son of Alexander the Great. And help me with their name for Alexander.
Sikander.
Sikander, thank you. So basically, the holy people, the holy priests of the area, you know, invite him to come, and they're going to test that he really is a god. And so they go to their temple, and they're going to physically harm him to see if he bleeds. And then they see the Freemason necklace, and they're like, oh, he really is a god, because that's our symbol, because I guess we're saying Alexander the Great was a Freemason.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So basically, Sean Connery's character Danny basically becomes a king. They're shown all of this... treasure that belonged to Alexander the Great. They're like, it's yours now. You can do with it what you want. They're like, okay, this is awesome. This all kind of goes to Danny's head. Peachy's like, let's get the F out of here. And Danny's like, no, I'm king now. I don't want to leave. This is great. This is awesome. And he's like, I'm going to make... There's this one woman that he saw, Roxanne, who he was really taken with her, and he was like, I'm gonna make her my wife. And the priests aren't happy about this because they're like, well, if a human marries a god, like, the minute they start making love, she's gonna be engulfed in flames.
Yeah, you put on the red light.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And, you know, but they just don't like it, but he pushes for it. And they have this huge ceremony. They bring her there, and it's this huge thing. And he's marrying her himself, and he puts the ring on.
I now pronounce me man and wife.
Yeah, exactly. He puts the ring on her finger, and instead of kissing him, she, like, bites his cheek.
She's a biter.
And he bleeds, and the priests are like, oh my god, he's bleeding, he's not a god.
This mother can get him.
So basically they're like, yeah, let's get him. And they try to get out of there and escape on the horses that Peachy had already prepped with the treasure. That doesn't really work out. Billy dies fighting. They basically force Sean Connery, Danny, to go out onto the rope bridge.
You ever see the Temple of Doom?
Yeah.
It hasn't been made yet.
Exactly. That, like, that he, you know, decreed be built, and they make him go out there, and he's singing, and Peachy sings with him as they cut the ropes, and he falls and he dies. And then apparently Peachy gets crucified, but he doesn't die, and they come back the next day, and they're like, oh, it's a miracle you're not dead. And then they let him go.
Hey, congratulations.
Right.
Get out of here, you scamp.
Here's your friend's head and his crown, and get the F out of here. And so he somehow makes it back through the mountain pass to Kipling and retells him the entire story. And you can tell he's been through a lot, and maybe he's not where he was mentally before he left on this trip.
I think in the book he is in an institution at the very end of the story.
Okay, that makes sense.
And dies a few days later.
Okay, all right, sure. He doesn't seem like he's
why put that in a film? Just end it already!
Just end it!
What is up with the phrase, the man who? You've got the man who would be king.
Mm-hmm.
The man who fell to earth.
Yes.
The man who knew too much. Mm-hmm. The man who knew too little. The man who shot Liberty Valance. The man who laughs. The man who wasn't there.
What about the woman who? Why is that funny?
It was like a bit that became genuine after a while.
Yeah.
I was going to do a whole thing, and then I was like,
I think we're a little too obsessed with men, is what I'm saying.
I mean, don't disagree.
The man who fell from Earth, that's the David Bowie alien film, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The that woman, was okay. How about this? The woman who sinned. Sounds about right.
Fantastic.
Here you go. The woman who loved Elvis, defined by a man.
Yep.
The woman who wasn't there. That's just all women.
Okay.
The woman who loves giraffes. Careful what you ask for.
These are all terrible.
You're getting it.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wondered, like, where did that mean? That's because that's a meme. A repeated element of an idea or something. What's up with that?
I don't know. Isn't one of them a Bond film? The man who knew too much? Is that
the man with the golden gun?
Oh, okay. There you go.
If we had to take the who out, yeah.
Yeah.
That works. This is not the first John Huston movie that we have done on Craft of Services.
Oh, okay.
Not Craft of Services.
Yeah, right.
It is Covidios.
Covidios.
Because that's the bit.
Yes.
The bit that we are so committed to. The African Queen would be another one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
And of course, he directed other films like The Maltese Falcon, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, mm-hmm. Prizzi's Honor. So, yeah, this was a passion project of his for years, and he wanted to, speaking of Bogey, he wanted to do it back in the day with Clark Gable and Bogey.
That would have been interesting. I don't know, though.
I mean, think it's funny because before this started, we kind of like teased that we were going to talk about the social elements of this.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm so glad this was made in 1975 because...
Yes.
In 1976, I think they probably just wouldn't have made it. And in 1974, I don't think it would have been self-aware about the problems here. I have not read the Kipling book. Kipling literally invented the phrase white man's burden with his poem, White Man's Burden.
Yeah.
Which is about the Philippines, still applies. And it is, he is the cheerleader for British colonialism, and not even like at the end of it, like at the tail end, he died in 1936. So like British colonialism was pretty much over, at least on its deathbed. And he's still out there saying, rah, 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 the white man is the light of the world. You know, it's going to bring it to the lower societies.
It's so weird.
And like, so if this had been made in 1960, like before, I think Bogie died in 60, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would have had the sensitivity.
I don't think it would have.
And I like the fact that they, both of these stars are can be goofy. I think there needs to be a goofiness, not to let these little scamps off the hook, but that lets you into this sort of self-reflecting satire that it is.
Yeah.
If it was Bogey, and sure, Bogey can kind of crack a joke at himself, but Bogey and Clark Gable, it would have been...
It would have been very straight-laced.
It might have been Screwball if it was in like the late 50s.
Maybe.
But, yeah. Later on, he wanted to try it with Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas. Now that would have been rock solid jaw, just straight faced. You know what I mean? That would have been. And then, speaking of funny, then he wanted to try it on with Richard Burton and Peter O'Toole. That would have been too funny.
Wow.
Too funny.
Okay. It's interesting that he wanted to do this for so long that there's actual documentation of all of the pairings that he wanted to do.
Then he got down in the 70s, he got to Robert Redford and Paul Newman. Now, that one might have worked.
Yeah.
But you need British actors to play this. And that's what Paul Newman told him, John Huston. He said, get Michael Caine. The guy's good.
I love it.
He'd be good for this. Yeah. He's British. Find somebody else British or from the UK.
Yeah.
And that's how we landed on what we got.
Well, I think it works. I think these guys are, I mean, obviously both great actors, and I think that they played well off of each other.
Speaking of the flower of British colonialism, Tessa Dahl, the daughter of Roald Dahl, was supposed to play the role of Roxanne in the film.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. What happened there?
Well, she's white.
Yeah,
and
that's a problem.
John Huston... who, by all accounts, far as I know, great guy.
Yeah.
Made a lot of movies about white people. But nice guy. Went, this girl can't be white. We need a girl, we need a person of color. He didn't say that.
Right.
But that's what he meant. And then, I think he was, and then Michael Caine's like, well, my wife is sitting right here. And of course, Shakira Caine is a person of color.
Uh-huh.
And so we just get her in there.
Okay. So they were already married when they made this film. They didn't meet. And
they got married in 73.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Interesting. He's like, okay, dear, I want you to be in this movie and I want you to bite his face.
And when you bite his face, you look, the camera's here. See? Your teeth here. You bite his face. Master Wayne. Yeah, right.
Okay. All right.
So it's all kind of coming together here.
Mm-hmm.
This is highly rated. People like this.
It's very highly rated.
It was very successful when it came out. Not financially.
Oh, okay.
It's 75. People were watching Earthquake, or The Towering Inferno or something like that. I don't think that, it is a niche picture in a way. But yeah, it was called his best work since African Queen.
Yeah,
which was 25 years before.
Queen is really enjoyable.
Yeah, I think. Also another movie that really just tramples over the sort of racial politics of.
It does. I think it's one of those movies like you have to take it with a grain of salt of when it was made, but
not that person on Facebook. But
right.
I know what you
but
mean.
Like, it takes place in Africa.
The opening sequence of this film is just. The characters aren't there. We're not even setting anything up.
Yeah.
It's just going into a bazaar.
Yes.
And the bazaar is at 11.
Yes.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah.
And you got like people putting scorpions in their mouths. And you have a little kid like staring down two cobras.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that those elements exist in that culture. But don't you think it's like we all got them together for school picture day?
It sure seems
it's trying to emphasize the foreign exoticness of the East.
Yes.
Which is and kind of part of the problem.
They had a guy, like, I can't even remember what he was making exactly. He was some sort of artisan at the bazaar, and he was doing something with a machine. He was making some tool or something, and he was not just using his hands, he was also using his foot. And we had to really emphasize that as well. Okay, maybe you didn't pick up on that.
you did.
I do kind of feel that way. It doesn't exactly feel like we found a bazaar and we just started filming and that's what you see here. Right.
There's got to be a slow time at the bazaar.
Uh-huh.
But this was just like wall-to-wall people interacting with exotic deadly animals.
Mm-hmm. And all of the fabric artisans were dyeing like fabric and drying their fabric. And
Like a non-musical version of the opening of Aladdin. And about a sensitive. And so that's kind of where we're coming into this. I don't think that you can, perhaps, and I don't know if Houston would think about this, but perhaps you can present this as a world of dangers for two Englishmen who think that they know what they're getting into, mm-hmm. which is literally what the movie is.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't read the book. I'm sure that Kipling isn't too hard on the old colonists in his book.
Probably not.
But this is basically a story of two guys who think they know that they can handle these people and they don't know what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the people come out looking as good as they could or as sensitively as they could. No. This is no Dances of Wolves, with wolves, for example.
Right.
Have we reevaluated that yet, or have we just totally forgotten about it?
It Dances with Wolves? Yeah. Like gone back and looked at it for like sensitivity and stuff like that? No, I don't think we have. I mean, are you talking about us personally or like as a culture? As a culture, no.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No.
That's due.
Yeah.
It's been 30 years.
Right. Right. How sensitively was that actually done? Yeah.
You're probably due.
Probably. I think it's probably.
I think it's been 30 years this year, hasn't it? So.
Me? It sounds about right. Yeah.
That's our new podcast.
Okay.
Minutes with Wolves. We got to cut this out. We got to cut this out.
A minute by minute podcast to look at back at Dances with Wolves. Okay. All right. And in this minute, the thing that's insensitive.
Well, you just heard a baby being born.
Yeah, right.
But it was a Scientology birth, very quiet.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, it's kind of colonialism, the movie, with all the good and bad that that entails.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's like a microcosm of colonialism. Do you think that, like, the characters know that that's what they're doing, or do they just think that this is a good idea? I mean, I think that the filmmakers have to have some idea of that's what's going on, and I think that there has to be some sort of they're making some sort of statement about it. I feel like
there's the version where it's Aisha or like just a 30s jungle movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's a bunch of white guys in pith helmets and then, oh, the natives, oh, they got a bone through their nose. Oh, they're going to eat you. Where it's almost, you'd probably just go, what? What? Like, you just don't question those racist tropes, but you are turning up the heat on the cannibal pot
because
you want to do that, right? Then there's the very sensitive, maybe Dances with Wolves. I don't know. Some kind of drama today where a white guy's in the forest and they're just interacting with like real people and they do their best to depict the quote unquote natives as sensitively as possible, as realistically as possible. This is kind of in that like middle twilight world where I think the movie does go. I think it takes pains to establish them as real, believable people for the most part. But also they're like, oh, clearly this guy's a god. Oh.
Yeah, right. They're very superstitious, maybe a little
bit. Look at it this way.
Yeah.
I've said this before. Temple of Doom, 1984, 9 years later, which is more sensitive? This.
Yeah.
Totally this.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Nice work, Steven.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, I take this movie at its word because it's not Temple of Doom. And although the elements from the story, when Rudyard Kipling's like, oh, these backwards people, if some guy said he was Alexander the Great's son, they'd be like, whoa.
Right.
That's Rudyard Kipling's voice in the story.
That's true.
I think the filmmakers are doing everything they can to make it like a believable thing mm-hmm. in the story. You know, it's they're hitting the head around the ball.
I know. Did you get like a sense of like who Peachy and Danny were before they went off on this adventure?
And here's why.
Okay.
Danny is almost definitely not a Scots Highlander in the book, right?
Right.
But they're just English boys.
Do you know what I mean? Who are in India. Yep. Who knows how long they've been
they're
here.
They're just blokes.
Yep.
But blokes in the Raj. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that's no excuse to not have a character.
Yeah.
But I think that serves as their characterization.
Okay.
And whether Kipling used that as a commentary on English colonialism, which he almost certainly did not.
Don't think so.
The movie does, mm-hmm. I think that just sort of serves for it. You know, they're not quite Butch and Sundance, but one of them is a little smarter and has a little more plans, you know, than the other.
Yes. And
one is more Butch than Sundance.
Yeah, right. I feel like Danny actually had experience in the military or the army or
they're
something.
They're both in the army.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess they both have the coats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rudyard Kipling can ride his little train, you know, because of men like these guys. These guys are the soldiers and the, I think they were, you know, sergeants or non-commissioned officers or whatever in the British armies that subjugated the continent.
So are they like out of a job? Like how do they have the time to like
go here? That's part of it. This is the wild bunch of the Raj.
Right.
You know, things we don't need people like them anymore. So
gotcha.
They need to go somewhere else.
They need to hustle and find something else to do.
Wild bunch plus the gods must be crazy minus the fun and action that those two suggestions would seem to suggest. Equals the man who would be king.
There's not as much action in this as you would
think. No, but in just 9 short years, you would get the breathless action and spectacle of Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
And yet you read the reviews and the notices for this film, and people are like, it's the thrilling adventure ride of the year.
Right.
And they're not just like, that's not just a placeholder for that term, for that phrase, until they come up with Fast and Furious movies.
Right.
Like, people were just, you know, there wasn't a dry seat in the house. Watching this film, I guess.
At the time, it was very action-packed. Yeah.
All those Edith Head costumes.
Oh, my gosh.
Some of them, she didn't work quite as hard on some of those.
Didn't seem like it.
I have a purple shirt and some pants. Oh, he's a native of Afghanistan.
Oh, my goodness.
What's up with the Masons?
I don't know. I mean, I think you told me Kipling was actually a Mason.
Kipling was a Mason?
He obviously, that was important.
Would
to him.
Include that he probably sees himself in these two dudes, huh? To me, it
probably.
Seems like what's the intention? To me, it seems like his intention was just we almost pulled it off,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
We almost made it.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine him ever criticizing what these guys did. It's more just they reached too high.
Yeah. Right. 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 Right.
At some point in the story, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we're not saying don't fly. It wouldn't be cool to fly.
No.
You just went too far.
Yeah.
Alexander's gold, too much.
Yeah.
You probably could have just ran that town and banged all the ladies and been fine.
Or you could have left with the gold and not been king.
Whereas I think, and yeah, I think, well, yeah, Roxanne was too far.
Yes.
Yes, she was. I think that, but I think the film is trying to be clear about the fact that, like, just doing this in general.
Not
a bad
good idea. Yeah.
Sure, you can come in with your knowledge of guns and your sophistication, and maybe these people aren't as sophisticated to not know that you're swindling them, but the truth will out eventually.
Yeah.
If you exploit people and you oppress them,
they're
going to strike back.
Yeah. And hard, like they're going to murder you. I think that the film is trying to say that these guys are kind of naive to think that they can get away with this.
But they've seen but they've seen their governments
do the
exactly
same thing.
That.
Yeah. So they think they can do it better or do it and get the credit for it. And
maybe
get money.
They think that it's their God-given right. You know, they talk mm-hmm. about how it's destiny, but you forgot to say manifest.
Right.
Destiny before that.
Right.
And they think that as Englishmen, this is, you know, God's role for them is to civilize the people of the world. Because they come in and they go, They go to the like the worst town in the area, you know, run by Udis the warlord.
Yeah.
And they tell him that they're going to get him all this stuff, and he's dead in 8 minutes.
Pretty much.
But they organize that town, then that town attacks another town. Some people die, but then the other town is now part of their town, too. And
yes.
Pretty soon they have a whole multicolored league of soldiers all marching
right.
together. So they basically unified the area. Then they go, why should we do this? Here's what's good about it. If your crops go bad, we've got crops over here.
Right.
We all share the crops. You invented socialism.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Then Sean Connery goes, I'm going to be the king. You invented monarchy.
Yeah, right.
Then everybody comes to cut your head off. You invented revolution.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And they just go through it all on fast forward.
They do.
Yeah.
They absolutely do. And don't play God, I guess, is another... I mean, maybe it's rote, but if you pretend to be God, they'll figure it out.
No, Morgan Freeman's got God. Yes. You can't play him.
No,
Michael Caine, you can be the devil.
Yeah, right, exactly.
If you want to.
Billy is an interesting character in all of this. Like, I feel kind of bad for him because, like, maybe he's an opportunist, too, because he's, like, latches himself onto these guys because for whatever reason he thinks, like, this is something I know and
money.
I understand.
He's getting money out of it, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
but he is the character, the native, who is completely, you know, sold out to,
yeah.
to the invader, to the ideology
right.
that's coming in.
I suppose you're right. I just kind of feel bad for him because they're like talking and plotting in front of him, and then they're like, you won't say anything, will you? And of course he's going to say, no, I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
He knows where his bread is buttered, but...
With his crooked knife.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't know. Like the priests have a lot of power in this area too. Like what do you think about?
I think that Rudyard Kipling did not meticulously study the religious traditions of this area.
I think you're probably right.
And I think that, you know, to their credit, you know, we're trying to give the filmmakers credit, but I doubt that they spent all that much time doing it too. Would you recommend this film?
I mean, yes. I think that it's a good look back at... good adventure films from the past. Do I think it's the best Michael Caine or Sean Connery film? Probably not. But yeah, I'd recommend it.
No, you would say that the best Michael Caine film is...
God.
Hannah and Her Sisters.
Ipcris File is pretty good.
Which we couldn't watch for this.
I mean, I like The Dark Knight too, so...
That's not a Michael Caine film.
No, it's not really.
So. I would recommend it just because it's Caine, it's Connery. Everything they touch turns to gold and then death. No, I mean, it's for the same reasons. And I don't know. There is something. It's enjoyable. I could see watching it again. I think in this day and age, it's difficult to watch things. We just talked about at the beginning of the show about how you can do this. Not should, but it's possible. But now I'm sort of relenting and saying it would be tough to watch this without considering the implications.
Of when it was made.
Of when it was made.
Yes.
The person that made it in Kipling.
Yes.
And is literally in it in the form of Christopher Plummer, who gives a great 4-minute performance.
Right.
It's a little more than that, but miss that guy. But I look at the conversation we're having because of it.
Right.
So, yeah, I would definitely say you got to watch it. You should watch it. You should watch it. Hell, you're better than I am. Give me more.
I'm better?
Yeah.
You should watch it.
You should watch it.
You should watch it.
You should watch it. Master Wine.
Which it almost sounds like, hey, you should watch it. Like, watch what you're doing.
Well, the secret to, you know, saying, you know, Michael Caine in Michael Caine is saying my cocaine.
Oh, my God.
But not like, my cocaine. It's like the longest vowel sounds and consonants that you can.
Oh, okay.
Well, there you go. The show that would be over if we would stop talking.
There you go.
It's weird. You know, it's like one of those movies that it's like, I feel like I should like this more, or maybe I should hate this more. I guess I don't know how I feel about the film.
Have a stronger opinion
I have
about
reasons
it.
To not like it. I have reasons to really like it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it's got us talking, you know?
Yeah. That's the good thing, I think.
You ever want to see Sean Connery's butt? Dial it in.
Yeah, I was just waiting for that moment.
This is the butt of a god.
Oh my god.
You better believe it. Tell Darby O'Gill about this.
Oh my goodness.
Tell us what's going on with you on social media, Facebook, Twitter. If they've invented some new thing, we'll be there.
That's right.
Now we're doing Harry Fonda. But yeah. yeah, follow us there. You know, say hi to us. Say what's going on. Give us a like. Do that whole thing. Also on your listening platform of choice, wherever you go, sign up there. Subscribe. Do that. Do the subscribe. That's one S.
Yes.
You're going to sign up. That's another S.
Uh-huh.
You're going to rating
give us some
and a
stars.
Review and some stars.
Yeah.
I knew I hired you for a reason.
Yeah.
Give us a rating. We'd appreciate that. Give us a review because we want to know how you think that we're doing. Not this show, though. All the other shows, but not this one. It's hot.
It's
here,
very warm.
And it's getting near Memorial Day, and it's starting to feel like summer. I don't know if that's just inculcated in a kid's DNA.
I think so.
And you grow up and you think, I'm going to go to the park, and they're going to do the 21 gun salute.
Whoa.
And then I'm getting ice cream.
Ice cream,
and
I'm
out of here. But don't run out on us just yet. Give us 5 stars, a nice rating on that platform if you could.
Yes.
We really appreciate it. We'll be back next week to talk about another classic film. Is it classic? Give them a tease.
Yes. I don't know. I haven't picked it yet. Oh, so. Little peek behind the curtain.
What's that sound? Sausage grinder.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, all right. We'll be back to talk about another film. And until then, we're signing off. I'm your host, Caliban.
I'm your co-host, Mikan Hanna.
Keep the geek fires burning.